Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And a very good morning to you. We welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this 7th day of October, of November. It's not 7th. What's today? It's the 8th, isn't it? It's the 8th day of November. My watch is, it always gives me these sorts of fits. Thinking it's the 8th day of November. What do you know about that? The 7th day of November. It is the 8th day of November. And we're getting a good start here this morning. And before we go to our first caller who's already on the line, we want to go ahead and take a look at the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 46 degrees, downtown 50 degrees, Anderson 44, Clemson 52. Today, partly cloudy, near record highs near 80, and southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And Dr. Coben has been reading a book, is writing a book called The Christian Theology of Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. And under each chapter, he writes... He has a few quotes under there, and I want to read one right now. This one is from Chapter 2, The Nature of the State, and it's by General Robert E. Lee. A young man should say what he means and mean what he says. Avoid the demeaning examples of politicians, government bureaucrats, and lawyers.
Yes, those aren't people you want to follow necessarily. Okay, appreciate that. Good quotation from Robert E. Lee. All right, we have a caller on the line. We'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with?
You're speaking with Robert Whitten.
Well, hello. Yes, hello, Robert. We spoke yesterday on the phone, and you had some exciting information about creation science, or about, I guess, debunking the whole Big Bang Theory, as I recall.
Yes, sir. And I've written the Greenville News, and I sent them $30 to edit it for me, and they sent me back my check and would not even print it. And it's really sad state for especially South Carolina, supposed to be the belt buckle of the Bible Belt state, and we can't even debunk these pagan beliefs.
Now, let me get this straight here, Robert. You're saying that you sent them to edit it. You mean you wanted them to proofread it for you? You wanted them to print it for you?
I wanted them to print it for me, and I got a letter back with my check back, and Beth Paget, who's the editor, and she's a very bright lady, but she wrote back and said that because it didn't correspond with news that was in, you know, current, that she felt that it was her duty not to publish it.
Huh. Have you tried to send it back again, or have you tried sending it up to the Spartanburg Herald and see what happens?
No, sir. I haven't tried anywhere else. My writing skills are not all that great, so that may have played into it, but I use a common sense attacks against the Big Bang, and I wanted to expose some of them today on your show, if you didn't mind, and get your opinion, your feedback, and see what you thought.
Yeah, go ahead. We talked the other day about the Big Bang Theory and about some problems. A lot of scientists are abandoning it in general. Even people that don't believe in God or believe in creation are realizing there's too many holes in this, and I've already slammed it the other day for not truly being science because it's not observable or you can't replicate it.
Right.
And so it's truly not a science. But go ahead. Start with that basis in mind. Go ahead, and what have you got?
All right. I heard Dr. Lawrence Krauss on 1330 last week explaining the Big Bang. They presuppose that all mass came from a spot smaller than an atom. And that is so ridiculous. It would be like putting the moon or the earth in a box smaller than the atom. I believe God created all matter at one time.
Why do they believe that it had to be all the universe's matter put into a box that small?
I don't know. I didn't understand that part. It sounded ridiculous when I couldn't believe a grown man would say that.
Hmm.
But to start out, they believed that it had a single singularity that was smaller than an atom for all the mass in the multi-universes.
Hmm.
And that seems so absurd. I just can't fathom why someone would even suggest it and believe it. To me, it takes more faith to believe in the Big Bang Theory than to believe in God.
Well, that's certainly true, as I described that the other day. It's a remarkable leap of faith to jump into the Big Bang Theory.
Well, this Dr. Krauss, Lawrence Krauss, is attacking the intelligent designers of the anti-Darwin movement. And he said that it's a shame that he has to defend Darwinism. And he's written a book on the Big Bang.
Mm-hmm.
But he said that he was frustrated where he's had to step out of his field just to defend Darwinism and get away from his own.
Hmm.
And he's a physicist of some kind, and he is a doctorate. But, all right, past the single singularity, the Big Bang is believed that every 10 million degrees of Kelvin, that for each successive 10 million degrees, another element came into being.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it seems very absurd since the melting points of our most dense metals boil off at 6,200 degrees Kelvin. And those metals on the periodic table are 75 and 79. It'd be tungsten and requiem. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be 780 or 750 million degrees Kelvin to have formed it. Mm-hmm. When their boiling points are 6,200 degrees maximum. So it only takes one single counter theory to cancel out a theory altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And because the singularity ideal and the melting points of metals that would dissolve away before it ever reached a million degrees.
Mm-hmm.
It's impossible at this point. But then when you figure in that the eighth element, oxygen, would have been manufactured at 80 million degrees Kelvin, I've seen in science projects where they strike a match, blow it out, and put it back inside a test tube of pure oxygen, and it would light back.
Mm.
So how can oxygen be manufactured at such a phenomenal temperature range? That to me is also absurd.
Okay, now you're speaking to people right now, including me, who don't know a lot about chemistry and physics, and what you're saying sounds good, but again, you're speaking to people that don't know a lot. I wonder what the response is going to be. Now, tell me first, Robert, what is your background? You've mentioned somebody else that you're criticizing has a PhD in physics. What's your background, and how do you contend with people when they say, look, I have a PhD in physics, and this is, I don't agree?
Well, sir, I've self-studied. I got Harlow Shapley's Science Ponders Religion, where in 1960, the most eminent minds of science were basically meeting with a lot of theologians, and they were confronting the ideas of God based on the Big Bang, and from their argumentation and what they lacked in explaining how, you know, for instance, the singularity point, how the temperature ranges are absurd with any standard of our known physics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no way these elements could have lasted or been manufactured from temperatures past a million degrees.
Okay, now I hear that, and it sounds good to me. I think I agree. I'm a person that's not a physicist or a chemist saying that. But why don't they realize this? Or are you saying they realize it and they believe at any rate, and it's just completely false?
Well, I went to that EUNE conference of the intelligent design theorists, mm-hmm. and I explained to the lawyer who was there, and Ed Sissons, mm-hmm. and he's the one confronting the Kansas Education Board. I explained to him back in 1912, and this is in Albert Einstein's Life and Times by Ronald W. Clark on page 196, 197. The most eminent scientist of the world signed this agreement that they would not delve into monotheism, which is the code name for religion. They would not undertake the study of God. I forgot how they exactly said it. And then they would not undertake metaphysical proofs of any sort. And any one of the scientists who did this would be blackballed. The only one that did not attend was Henri Poincaré, the mathematician turned philosopher from Einstein's theory of relativity. And I don't really understand why Einstein showed up, because he definitely believed in God.
Mm-hmm.
But they all agreed to this, and there were a lot of atheist scientists who were present at this meeting. But it's a political manifesto.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so but still, how do you respond to people? They must know what you know. I mean, if you're a physicist, I assume you get a PhD in physics. You know the chemicals or whatever these things are.
That's
boil off.
That's it, sir. I don't have a PhD.
No, I mean,
not a doctorate.
No, but how did they respond? They must know this. So how do they know this and willfully deny it? That's a concern. I don't know if you know the answer to this. I'm wondering, is it completely falsification on their part, where they know that they're telling a lie, that the Big Bang couldn't have created elements by getting things up to, you know, 75 million Kelvin or whatever it is, and they just continue with it anyway? Or or would they have a counter to what you're saying and say, no, there is a possibility, and this is what it is? Do you know what their argument would be in response?
I'm not real sure what their argument would be against it, but I'm sure there's nothing logical that they could throw against it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially the melting points. They're irrefutable. So if they did try to refute it, it would just have to be double talk. And from speaking with the intelligent design scientists, they explained to me that, especially out in California, something to do about the other atheist scientists. They're afraid to admit there's a God. I don't know why. I don't understand why somebody so bright would fear God.
Well, they do, because they hate the existence of God. The very fundamental of materialism and secular humanism would want to put them as the captain of their own salvation and their own destiny. To admit there's a God is to admit that they might not be the end of all things themselves, and that they might not be able to have ultimate control over what they do. So it makes some sense when we look at the way things are going with them philosophically. But this is very interesting stuff. I wish I knew more about it, and it sounds very convincing to me, but a lot of things sound convincing until you hear the alternative, and that's why I was asking if you'd heard the alternative, because then it's even more convincing. Now, maybe you can tell us just a little bit more. We're going to go to a break in a second here, but maybe you can tell me a little bit more after the break, if you care to hold on, about this whole intelligent design movement among scholars that aren't even Christians, and why even they now have abandoned the Big Bang Theory. It may be that these are the reasons they have abandoned it, or maybe there are other reasons.
Not sure what the other reasons
are,
but there's a lot of people that are still holding to it, like that Lawrence Krauss. He was just on last week.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a scientist. He's written a new book on gravity.
Yeah.
But...
Well, there's a lot of ridiculousness on that. I mean, the internet was just talking about this business the other week, or I guess it was last week, where some gases were, or some light was found to be thought of as the original light.
I heard that.
Yeah, and that was, give me a break. I mean, this was one of the most preposterous things I've ever heard, that took far more faith to believe That story.
The Spirit of God is the only thing, and I wouldn't understand what somebody so bright, so much smarter than I am, would fear God.
Yeah.
I trust God.
Mm.
I mean.
Well, so do we. Well, I appreciate that. Well, Robert, I appreciate the call. If you have some more, stay on after the break. Otherwise, we thank you for calling. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we're going to be back in just a couple minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. Edward Abbey.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you've joined us this morning. Are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? The power of positive change is in your hands when you vote for libertarians. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they're regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. In Greenville, the business meeting is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at the library on Augusta Road, north of I-85, one block before reaching Malden Road. Visitors are welcome. The Spartanburg monthly meeting is on the first Thursday of the month at 6:30 p.m. in the private dining room at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In. Also, to talk politics, join us in Greenville for the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's at Cafe Underground just off of Main Street downtown. We would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We're going to go through a few news headlines. By the way, we appreciate very much Robert's call. He thought he had gone through everything he needed to discuss on the air. Appreciate him calling in this morning, having an interest in the show and bringing up those very important points. I wish I could comment more. I wish I, like all things, knew a whole lot more than I do about certain areas in natural science. I can be a consumer of that information, but I'm not a very good judge of whether or not such things that are being told to me are right or not, just because I'm ignorant of that sort of thing, just as probably many of you are. But its story sounded great, because the Big Bang Theory is preposterous, you know. I mean, it just, on its face, it can't be science, and it just doesn't make any sense. In general, it just seems like a preposterous leap of faith to believe it. But perhaps some other callers will be interested in talking about the Big Bang Theory and call in with some more insight. The fact that you don't have a PhD doesn't mean you can't know something about another area of science or of anything. That doesn't matter. It does add some credibility, because it shows that you mastered some basics and fundamentals. So don't feel afraid to call in if you don't have a PhD in physics or chemistry or something. You could still might still have some knowledge that can be useful for us to think about these things. All right, well, let's go to Fox News here and see what they've got to say this morning. They got lots of kind of, some stories are wild, and some are strange and even perverse. But here, we'll read through a few of these just so we can keep you up on what the materialists are up to for the day, or others for that matter. The French government authorizes curfews. But the use of military is still off the table, so they're not going to declare martial law quite yet. And only 1,173 cars were burned in 226 municipalities across the country last night. Police consider that a good sign. I've got to admit, that sounds funny. Oh, only 1,173 cars were burned last night in 226 localities. Look, there's complete chaos and riots breaking out in France, and here they are, acting like, oh, well, we got this sort of... They don't have it under control. I mean, it's a total massive rejection of government policy, in particular this one fellow who's trying to be a hardliner. Anyway, that's one interesting thing going on there in around the world. Well, here's something that's totally bizarre, maybe cover the children's ears slightly for this one. This is right on the front page of Fox News. Witnesses, cheerleaders had sex in bar. Two Carolina Panthers cheerleaders were charged after their arrest at a bar, where witnesses told police the women had sex in a restroom. Renee Thomas and Angeline Keithy, 20 and 26, of Belmont in Pittsburgh, North Carolina, were taken to Hillsbury Jail. Witnesses said they heard said the women were having sex in the stall with these other angering patrons waiting in line to get into the restroom at the club. This is disgusting stuff. And I'm laughing because, can you imagine the scene that this is making? I don't even want to go there. Don't even think about why this was disturbing, or what they heard or what they saw or anything else. This is football for you folks, I guess. Who knows? I love college football. You know, go Trojans. We're 9-0, and I think it's wonderful. I was even impressed to see the South Carolina Gamecocks, who usually fumble every time they touch it, every time I see them, actually beat another team this week. So I'm impressed to some extent with a 5-3 or whatever they are team. But the Trojans are just awesome. I was shocked that UCLA didn't pull out as they should have against Arizona, but. Be that as it may, pro football hasn't been a great interest of mine because of certain events that that seem to go on there, and who knows why they've got lesbians working for them. Whatever these women are, this is something that hits the front line. Can you imagine how? Think how much the world has changed. I mean, when I grew up, you wouldn't see this on the headlines of Fox News. And you wouldn't, or they wouldn't, you didn't have Fox News, but you wouldn't see it on the headlines anywhere. They would not have pointed this out like that, and as it is. And and why are people upset? They're not upset because there were like lesbians in public or whatever. They're upset because they had to wait to get into the bathroom, and it irritated them. Well, I mean, the world has changed, people, and we need to uphold the Christian worldview. We need to be strong for it, not just sit there and roll back while the culture rolls over us. We need to engage our culture, take a stand. Now, I'm not saying if you're a lesbian that God necessarily hates you and that you're going to go to hell. Okay? Now, it's true that if you don't repent of your lesbianism, you're going to go to hell. You will not be able to survive and before the judgment seat of God without the righteousness of Christ. But we believe that lesbians can be saved, and we want to encourage people to repent and believe in Jesus. We hold to the Christian worldview. The only hope that man has is ultimately to repent of his sins and trust in the free offer of the gospel coming through Jesus Christ, who is our Lord and Savior. And we'd encourage you, if you're trapped in lesbianism, to do that today. So if you're hearing my voice today, don't think I'm just picking on lesbians. You're in the front page here, and people who are lesbians are in the front page for what they did, and the issues come up. And so I'm just making a comment of where we should stand as Christians holding to the Christian worldview. Because some Christians don't, but Christians holding to the Christian worldview. This is not an acceptable practice. God hates it, and it is a sin like anything else that must be repented of if you ever hope to have joy and peace in your life. Okay, let's move on to some other headlines. Here we have the WHO chief, that's the World Health Organization chief from the United Nations. Be ready for bird flu. Geneva, countries around the world need to start rehearsing plans for tackling a human flu pandemic to identify hidden obstacles and ensure their best response once the virus arrives, the World Health Organization said Monday. I just really have some doubts about this, you know. I mean, 60 people, like Charlie Reese have said, have been infected by this out of 6 billion. It's not a pandemic. It's killing a bunch of birds. It's not clear that it's going to spread to the human population or that it's going to be a pandemic. Sounds like a lot of people are getting worried about nothing. I may be mistaken about that. I hope I am not mistaken about it. But at any rate, here we have, I think, something getting blown out of proportion. Maybe there's some nefarious other reasons or ulterior motives that are being used so that government can install martial law and in many places on account of worries over bird flus. I've even heard some people say they manufacture bird flu. I don't buy that, but I wouldn't put it past the state to do it. I mean, if it came out later on that it really was a manufactured item, that George Bush or somebody else did it in order to gain more power, I wouldn't be totally shocked, but it seems a little over the top for me at this point to say such things, although I have heard that. I've seen some of that on the alternative news wires going on. Okay, Bush defends policy on terror detainees. President Bush vigorously defended U.S. interrogation practices on the war on terror Monday and lobbied against a congressional drive to outlaw torture. There's an enemy that lurks in plots and plats once. I'm laughing again. Why? Because, I mean, George Bush is so beyond reality of what we should be doing as a free people, if we were a free people, and upholding the standards of righteousness. We don't get to torture people. Torturing people is not only unconstitutional, it's ungodly. We don't need to behave that way. There is no chance that we have a need for torture. And here George Bush is worried that congressional drive to outlaw torture is heating up too much. Bush said, "So you bet we will aggressively pursue them, but we will do so under the law," he declared. "We do not torture." Yeah, well, there's too much out there to suppose that he is indeed torturing people, or not him personally, but you know, people under his, among his minions, people among, under his on his staff or under them or somewhere down the line are, namely on the rank and file, following orders. We're just following orders. Anyway, a lot of stuff being said about torture. I don't have any hard facts in front of me, but we've read it on other editions of Christian Worldview. There is a lot to be a lot of reason to believe there's people torturing. Well, here's four GIs killed in a homicide attack. Five are charged with detainee abuse. There you go. More talk about torture. So how many does this bring it up to, the total? Just another four. Bomb blows up. Suicide bomber blew himself up in Baghdad at a checkpoint, or south of Baghdad. Okay, so I guess that brings up, doesn't tell you the exact number in here. Oh, there it is. At least 2,051 now. Seems like we just hit 2,000 recently of number of U.S. military personnel. Of course, as from the Christian worldview perspective, what's the main number, the main statistic that we're concerned about in Iraq? The number one statistic is how many Christians have been killed. I haven't seen that, but there's got to be some significant number of Christians who have been killed. The second statistic is going to be how many people in general who are innocent have been killed. That's the second most important statistic to me, and it's somewhat of a distant second from the first. The third statistic that I want to know is how many people in total have been killed, including, well, I guess you could separate how many servicemen in Iraq and servicemen who are Americans have been killed and the total number. And then, of course, finally, the grand total of all people who have been killed. But see, all we ever hear about is, well, how many American soldiers have been killed, 2,050 and 51, apparently. And although that's an important number to know, I wish I knew the other. Now, of course, it's somewhat difficult to know how many Christians have been killed. They probably don't take a survey or, you know, have them fill out a questionnaire before they shoot them or before they accidentally get in the path of destruction. So it's basically an impossible statistic to gather, but I think from our point of view as Christians, we need to be thinking along those terms. My point in mentioning is I don't think Christians think enough about the Christian worldview and what they should be focusing on and what should be their greatest concern, and instead follow along follow the Pied Piper, the media along, to believe whatever statistics they report are the most important ones. And I think we need to be cautious of that. It's a mistake to do so. All right, you've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we're going to go to our top of the hour break, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net, that's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
I am for doing good to the poor, but I differ in the opinions of the means. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them or driving them out of it. Benjamin Franklin.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, sensible radio that knows that open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. It's time for your next shock treatment.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Man kills a buck with his bare hands in his bedroom. It looked like a crime scene, but no charges will be filed after Wayne Goldsberry killed a buck with his bare hands in his daughter's bedroom. The engagement lasted an exhausting 40 minutes, but Goldsberry finally subdued the 5-point white-tailed deer that crashed through a bedroom window at his daughter's home Friday. When it was over, blood splattered the walls, and the deer lay on the bedroom floor, its neck broken. Goldsberry was in his daughter's home. When he heard glass breaking, he went back to check on the noise and found the deer. It was standing about like this, peeking around the corner when the deer came out of the bedroom, said Goldsberry, demonstrating while peering around his kitchen wall. The deer ran down the hall into the master bedroom, jumping back and forth across the bed. I could tell he was really tearing up the place back there, Goldsberry said. Goldsberry entered the bedroom to confront the deer, and after a brief struggle, emerged to tell his wife to call police. After returning to the bedroom, the fight continued. Goldsberry finally was able to grip the animal and twist its neck, killing it. He was trying to get up the corner wall, and I just came in behind him and grabbed him by the horns and just started pushing down, said Goldsberry. Goldsberry, sore from the struggle, dragged the den animal from the house. Benton County Sheriff, or this is Arkansas, Keith Ferguson said when he arrived, he found the deer dead in the front yard. Goldsberry intended to have the deer processed for its meat. Yeah, well, he might as well, since it just caused about who knows how much damage to the house. That's strange, huh? Deer pops into your own house and starts tearing up the place with its antlers. My, what a, I mean, you sometimes see birds come in the house and things like that, but deer? That's that's unusual. We have to admit that's an unusual unusual event, to say the least. Okay, the related media tab under the tyrannyresponse.com website is something we want to to talk about, and we're going to do so right after the weather.
Right now in Greenville Smart Market, it's 50 degrees. Downtown, also 50. Anderson, 48. Clemson, 52. Today, partly cloudy. Near record highs near 80. And southwest winds, 5 to 10 miles per hour. And Dr. Coben has been writing a new book, which is called The Christian Theology of Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. And the title of chapter 2 is The Nature of the State. And under each chapter, he puts a few quotes down there from famous people. And one of the quotes under here is by none other than Karl Marx. For the bureaucrat, the world is a mere object to be manipulated by him.
For the bureaucrat, the world is a mere object to be manipulated by him. That's important stuff. It's important to know what was in the mind of Karl Marx or his observations. Why? Well, because he is our enemy, and we need to know something about what our enemy thinks if we're going to be effective in confronting him. And that's why the quotation there is at the head of the book, to challenge a little bit and the thinking of folks. Well, this is the 8th day of November, 2005. Under the related media tab on the Tyranny Response Network, we have a plug there for our friends at the Times Examiner. It is the independent conservative voice of the Palmetto State. Are you tired of reading liberal columnists? The Times Examiner features outstanding conservative and libertarian columnists. The Times Examiner supports home and Christian schooling, limited government, free markets, private property rights, gun ownership, Christian values, and our great Southern heritage. You can pick up a copy of the Times Examiner at newsstands around Greenville, South Carolina, or at their offices located at 44 Pine Knoll Drive. Full year subscription to the Times Examiner is only $25 a year in-state and $27 a year out-of-state. You can call 864-268-0576 to get your subscription started. That's 864-268-0576. If you're interested in placing an ad in the Times Examiner, call David at 864-859-6817. Ask for him by name, 864-859-6817. A little bit further down on the related media tab on the tyrannyresponse.com website is the South Carolina Fundamental Rights Petition to Save Your Private Property. We hope that you'll all visit that our website, the tyrannyresponse.com website, and go down and sign the petition. It'll take 30 seconds to tell South Carolina legislators that we believe that rights are fundamental, that are come from God and not granted by the state in any way. And in addition to that, we want to encourage people to understand that are in government that our private property is our private property, not to be confused with something they can take away on a whim. Of course, we know in reality there is unfortunately the case of feudalism, which still exists in America. That's another whole topic, but we'd like to at least continue the facade or the nostalgic belief that we own outright our property and our homes. All right, now here's an interesting article that was sent in by libertarianchristians.org by Brian Morton. It's by a guy named Robert Hawes, H-A-W-E-S. Why Christians should consider the libertarian alternative? Now, this is going to be somewhat shocking to people who are listening to the show and who are used to voting for Republicans, perhaps. But I'm going to take some time to read it here. I think it is an interesting piece to take on for today. He said, I'd like to take some time to write a few words to Christians who may be frustrated with the course of events in this country, concerned for the future, and disillusioned with the increasingly authoritarian bent of the Republican Party. Specifically, I'd like to encourage you to consider an alternative that may have been heretofore unknown or else unthinkable to you. I'd like to encourage you to consider the libertarian alternative. Growing up in a strong religious conservative environment, Baptist, and you don't get much more conservative than that, I knew little of libertarian ideals. Based on the input of others, I was under the impression that libertarians were essentially a group of people in pursuit of the legal right to be immoral. The party of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, if you will. It was not till I was in college before I seriously began to consider what libertarians themselves had to say on the matter, and I have to admit that it was an eye-opener. It took a few years, but resistance eventually proved futile. I was ideologically assimilated. Based upon my own experience and reflection, Christians, I believe, that most of our ranks are actively contributing to their own frustrations when it comes to political considerations. I contend this for two reasons. One, moral laws do not make a moral society. Many Christians are laboring under the delusion that they can reshape America into a haven of virtue if they can but wrest power from the godless left and pass laws that punish immoral or otherwise objectionable behavior. If we could just get God back into the schools, things would be different, and so forth. The problem here is twofold. First, there is the old saying, a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. People will not alter their convictions merely because you pass a law regulating their behavior. How many of you have become liberals because we have a welfare system? How many of you have become apostles of the public school system because you're taxed for its support? Second, morality and virtue will not endure if they are written in statute books, but not in the hearts of people. Pass all the laws you like, but if those laws do not reflect the beliefs of the population at large, rest assured that people will subvert those laws and or seek their repeal. In time, you will not even be able to pass such laws because you will find few willing to sponsor them. Our leaders are not hatched in incubators. After all, they are chosen from among the people. Thus, if the people themselves lack morality and virtue, from where will you find moral and virtuous leaders to pass the laws you seek? Number two, moral laws must necessarily reflect the majority's morality. Thomas Paine once said, He that would make his own liberty secure must guard even his enemy from oppression, for if he violates his duty, he establishes a precedent that will reach to himself. By seeking to enforce Christian views of morality and virtue upon all of society via the law, that meaning legislation, I think, Christians are unconsciously establishing a precedent that will be used, is being used, against them. If government enforces morality and virtue, it must necessarily enforce someone's particular vision of morality and virtue, and that someone will invariably be the voting majority. The question we have then to ask ourselves is whether we are prepared to lay all that we hold dear at the feet of whoever musters the next majority vote. And I'll interject here. This is great stuff he's saying so far, by the way. This is precisely why divine right, the king's people, the folks that have the revitalized or reshaped divine right view, fall flat on their face and end up doing mischief, more mischief than they do blessing for this nation, and why it'll eventually come back to stab us in the back. It's also why people who are consistently Reconstructionist or Theonomist realize that unless there is a massive regeneration, or unless we move into a golden age, it will never work. The idea of using proactive policy in the state will only work if there are massive numbers of Christians perpetually. And that's what they, of course, hope for at some point in time. They don't believe we're by any means there right now. They're just working towards that end. So anyway, but divine writers actually have their head in the sand at the point where they don't even understand these very basic premises. Anyway, so let's go on and read the article here. So how does libertarianism address these issues? Libertarian ideology suggests a system in which government merely exists to keep the peace. It defends individual liberty and property against force and fraud. It does not enforce moral or religious codes of personal behavior, nor does it redistribute wealth or play favorites. In short, it places responsibility for one's life back in one's own hands, treats people equally, and prevents the state from interfering in all affairs where your actions do not directly impact someone else. Some Christians will object to this arrangement because a government that does not legislate morality and virtue cannot ban things that are wrong, nor can it actively support things that are right. But there is also another side to that, this libertarian coin. A government that does not involve itself in enforcing arbitrary standards of what is right, what's right and good for America, will not empower socialists to steal your income or to fund class warfare. It will not tax you for the support of public schools or interfere in your educational decisions, such as homeschooling. It will not tell you how to raise your children. It will not run your business or punish your success. It will not donate your behalf to those who consider crosses immersed in urine and aborted fetuses as in formaldehyde to be art. Other examples could be provided of areas where government routinely offends the beliefs of Christians at their own expense, but space does not permit us to discuss them here. Libertarianism, while certainly not a cure-all for our ills, is a better alternative to the present winner-take-all system. It's an ideology that allows individuals to live their lives free of the influence of others to the greatest possible extent, both us and them. Embracing it would end the majority of fights for the domination of the government in this country by removing the majority of reasons for which we fight over government, to control and keep from being controlled. It is a better solution to the political and cultural civil war currently raging in our midst than to merely keep fighting. It targets the underlying importance of the individual over the fickle whims of society. It defends your right to protect that which is most important to you and avoids the trap of setting a precedent that others will eventually use against you. However, libertarianism also requires a willingness to be tolerant of behavior that Christians personally find objectionable, and this is the most difficult selling point among our ranks. To that end, I suggest Christians reflect on two considerations. One, that the freedom they allow others may measure it back to them proportionately in the freedom they themselves are allowed, as Thomas Paine pointed out. And two, the example of Christ himself, who concentrated his ministry on individuals that came to him or are simply willing to hear him. The harshest words that he ever personally expressed towards anyone were directed at the Jewish religious leaders, people who devoted their lives to forcing others to conform to their own personal standards of belief and behavior. Was Jesus without conviction? Hardly. But his message was designed to change individual lives, not force conformity to some arbitrary system that could only hold sway by force and intimidation. I would suggest that it is high time that we adopted the same stance toward our own model political Pharisees. Few of us have any desire to live under such people. Why should we then have any desire to be like them? Is tolerance for their behavior for the behavior of others such a high price to pay for the freedom to live our own lives and raise our children as we see fit? No other system offers such promise for so little sacrifice. Consider the libertarian alternative. And that's an excellent article, and I appreciate what the author has to say. In fact, I agree wholeheartedly. Robert Hawes, Why Christians should consider the libertarian alternative. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. Winston Churchill.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. And speaking of Christian libertarians, we'd like to talk about our good friend Dr. Stephen Yates, who actually wrote a piece that's available online, Why I Am a Christian Libertarian. He is here local in the upstate and has recently completed a book that's been published by the Worldviews Project. The book is entitled Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. You can order a copy of the book for $20.99 plus $2.50 shipping and handling. If you're a member of the Constitution Party or the Libertarian Party, you can deduct $2 from that price. Send all orders for the book to the Worldviews Project, care of Dr. Yates, 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville, 29615. That's 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville, 29615. Well, going back to some of the things the research staff for the Tyranny Response Network have sent in, here's something about this new Judge Samuel Alito. It's called Republican Lies About Judge Alito. J.H. Hubert is the person who writes the article. It looks like it's from lewrockwell.com. J.H. Hubert, the last name is spelled H-U-E-B-E-R-T. President Bush, all is forgiven. Your most recent move is such a brilliant stroke, such a triumph for those who value limited government that any blunders you may have made in the past seem insignificant. Yes, now all we must do is sit back and enjoy this as the Supreme Court will turn away from self-worship back toward the Constitution and the American people will reap the benefits, and that is because we will soon have a true constitutionalist on the bench. These are not my thoughts, of course, but paraphrased with quotes of a column by a 21-year-old neocon columnist, Benjamin Shapiro, who could not be more delighted with President Bush's nomination of Judge Samuel Alito to the United States Supreme Court. But even if we don't want to give President Bush that much credit, isn't Alito a relatively good choice? Isn't he at least better than the undeniably unqualified professorial sycophant Harriet Myers, and therefore, as the Cato Institute's Mark Moeller has put it, a step in the right direction? Alito and stare decisis. This is what we find out. Mr. Shapiro writes, Alito is a judge true constitutionalists have been waiting for. He is no enigma. He reads the Constitution as it was meant when it was written, and he's not afraid to challenge precedent. Okay. Of course, willingness to challenge precedent is a good thing indeed. It's an essential thing for being a good Supreme Court justice, given all the atrocious precedent the courts works under the day. But what basis do we have for believing Judge Alito will be doing this? He has been on the United States Court of Appeals for 15 years, and the Court of Appeals judges generally do not have the power to overturn precedents. They just apply them. Judge Alito could have used his opinions there as a forum to suggest the Supreme Court should overturn some terrible precedents, but I am unaware of, and Mr. Shapiro does not point to, any occasions in which Judge Alito did this. Instead, Mr. Shapiro's sole piece of evidence on Judge Alito's stare decisis views is in a 1986 University of Pittsburgh Law Review article in which he says Alito railed against an 1886 decision of the Supreme Court. Well, that's not very strong evidence for saying Alito's our man here. And we had evidence the other day from Covenant News that he had actually voted in favor of abortion rights in three different cases. I believe it was 95, 98, or 99, and 2000, not too long ago, 5 to 10 years ago at any rate, that those came up in his court. He voted the wrong way. On the other hand, we have much more direct evidence that Alito would leave bad precedents undisturbed. In one of his former law clerks, a leftist, says in this article, it's got a link there, so I'm not sure what this article it is, by Catherine Kate, anyway, whoever wrote that article, whatever article title was. She says, based on her first-hand experiences with Alito, she believes he would be disinclined to overturn precedent, and that his approach would be likely to resemble that of Chief Justice Roberts. That's a bad idea. Well, same thing was true with his originalist ideas. According to Legal Times, he's not an originalist. That's the most important thing. I don't see him saying, as the framers said in 1789, the way Scalia writes his opinions, adds Dem Leitner, who says he's a liberal Democrat. So there you go. People are already publishing, and the Democrats are quite pleased with the fact that he's really not an originalist, not going to go back to the strict interpretation of the Constitution like Scalia. Consider, this is skipping down a little further in the article, he says, consider the passage from a recent Slate investigation of Alito's decisions. Alito sat on a dozen panels in which judges disagreed regarding a citizen's Fourth Amendment rights. In each of those cases, Alito adopted the view most supportive of the government's position. Alito would have upheld the strip searches of an innocent 10-year-old girl dissenting from the opinion from the well-known civil libertarian Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff. Alito crossed swords with two Reagan appointees and arguing a jury shouldn't decide whether a police officer unlawfully allowed his men to push to the ground, handcuff, and hold at gunpoint another innocent family, etc. Mr. Shapiro is a avowed fan of the police state. Witness here the defense of the idiotic and tyrannical New York City policy of randomly searching subway passengers. So we can't really trust Shapiro, is what he's saying. The only way to fully restore civil liberties is to defeat our enemies. And that's what they're all about. He goes on to conclude his article and says, Judge Alito is not even worthy of, not even close to being worthy of our efforts. I don't know if Alito will be confirmed, but given his lifelong commitment to the federal government, I suspect he will. I am certain, however, that regardless of who wins the political battle, liberty will lose. So there is, from James Hubert, at any rate, this young man, he's quite convinced of that. This guy, Alito, is not our man, and there's a lot of reason to doubt Alito now, even though it sure seemed like he was the right man or the man for the occasion early on. I'm sure if you turn to other radio stations now, if you listen to other ones in the upstate here that are going on, you'll probably find people just in awe of George Bush for promoting this fellow. But we always had doubts because we knew the source of the appointment. But we'll have to wait and see. Sounds like he's not going to be strong on abortion, or against abortion, I should say, and he's not going to be a strong originalist or a strict constructionist for the Constitution, unfortunately. But we're not surprised. All right. Becky Akers writes an article that the TRN staff had sent up to us called Stomping Stutter. Apparently, the city of Aurora, Ohio, hasn't heard about this summer's Kelo decision from the Supreme Court. Though governments are now emboldened to steal our land, Aurora is still sneaking around as though the theft it contemplates is illegal. It's been spying on a woman whose farm it covets and is covertly sending its minions to harass her. It even clandestinely hired a lawyer to expedite the harassment. So far this year, Aurora's bureaucrats have wasted 6% of their planning and zoning legal budget on these efforts. Somehow, tell the poor saps that all they need to do is find a sports team panting for a new stadium or a corporation eager to build another mall, and voila, Mr. Stutter's land is theirs. Mrs. Stutter's troubles, skipping down a little bit here in the article, troubles stem from an incident in 1999. The zoning department decreed her property residential and threw a tantrum when Mrs. Stutter's son didn't acknowledge his resulting serfdom. Yes, and he is a serf, and they need to understand that. I mean, if serfs actually think they own their real property, then there's a problem. He says, let's give the newspaper credit. A number of the Knight Ritter Empire, or a member of the Knight Ritter Empire, the Beacon Journal fearlessly champions government in page after simplistic page. Are we surprised at that? No. Newspapers reporting on the story, of course, are not going to side with the feudal serf. They have to side with the feudal overlords, with the Lord Paramount, with the Lord of the soil, that is the state of Ohio, and the county, that's the under smaller jurisdictions, counties, even cities. No surprise. All right. Anyway, we have we haven't been on the. I just got a note from the research staff saying, we need to get on the cesspool again. Dr. Coben, I'd like to have Dr. Coben, says James, one on one night next week. whatever evening works best for him. Well, we're going to have to get back in touch with the political cesspool. I have not been on the political cesspool now for at least a few months, I think, and we'd be happy to go back on there. So we don't want to forget our friends out there in Memphis fighting for the truth on that evening broadcast, the political cesspool. So we'll be sure to do so shortly. Okay, we have Rosa Parks, Truth and Consequences. This is sent in by Gray Echoes. Rosa Parks, the commentary by Jim Dean. Bluntly put, Rosa Parks' story is a hoax. It was completely fabricated by leftists and liberals. The Rosa Parks bus incident was a carefully staged PR stunt carried out to get national press, and it worked very well. Rosa was trained at the Communist Highlander Folk School in Tennessee. The AJC on February 23, 1961, carried an article, "Highlanders and Dr. King Joined Forces." The purpose was to train civil rights activists. Rosa Parks was one of those activists. It was from Agent, from Operation Solo, the code name for the book of this fascinating story. It was Agent Number 58, Morris Childs, who fingered the whole Communist Party co-option of King. His brother Jack, in 1958, reported a conversation with James Jackson, the party secretary in charge of Negro and Southern affairs, where he and Eugene Dennis, head of CPUSA, had conferred with the most secret and guarded people who are put in touch with, consulting with, and guiding Martin Luther King. This was Levison and KGB agent Victor Leosovsky. And so they're going on and talking about how there was a strong communist connection here, and the FBI basically put their head in the sand and didn't even see what was going on. But we see, and I'm glad that Gray Echoes points this out, these people on the left, whatever their stripe, whether it be environmentalists or people that are demanding race rights for minorities and so forth, at base, at core, have the same principles, if they're not identically part of the communist or socialist manifestations in America. They always have been, because the two go hand in hand. If you've got to have man and his materialistic being at the center, you're going to tend towards a communistic worldview, which leaves everything to the control of man and thinking that he can actually change destiny and improve his situation versus what God has ordained in the market system. So anyway, that's a good way to take a good place to stop here, I think, before we take our bottom of the hour break. You are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this 8th day of November 2005, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
You're listening to homeschooler-friendly TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger,
nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
Government is the great fiction through which everybody endeavors to live at the expense of everybody else. Frederick Bastiat.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Want to encourage you all to get some volunteer efforts in gear and help the Tyranny Response Network. If you can volunteer an hour or two of time, if you want to be a producer on the Christian Worldview show temporarily, things like that, please give us a call at or give Chuck a call at 271-6761, 271-6761, or simply go to the under the contacts tab on tyrannyresponse.com, tyrannyresponse.net, and email somebody and let them know. We'd be happy to have your efforts and help this great effort here at Christian Worldview and the Tyranny Response Network. Now, let's check the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 50 degrees. Downtown, also 50. Anderson, 48. Clemson, 52. Today, partly cloudy, near record highs, near 80s this afternoon and today. Southwest winds, 5 to 10 miles per hour. And Dr. Coben has been writing his latest book, which is called The Christian Theology of Public Policy, Highlighting the American Experience. And chapter 2 is called The Nature of the State, and under each chapter he puts a few quotes there. And here's one of the quotes under chapter 2, The Nature of the State, by Thomas Jefferson. I would rather be exposed to the inconveniences attending too much liberty than those attending too small a degree of it.
Which is why he was a great libertarian leader, and we appreciate Thomas Jefferson very much. All right, the United States issues further warning on impending internal crisis. President and top leaders leave the country as South American war fears grow. Ooh. Kremlin diplomatic sources are reporting today that the United States has issued an additional warning to China, Russia, and the European Union and other countries, calling for strict non-interference in the internal affairs or what their cables describe as an impending internal crisis. Russian intelligence analysts are further noting that too many of top leaders in the United States have made hasty plans to be out of the United States this month. Russian military analysts are also reporting today that the United States-backed puppet regime in Peru has been ordered by the United States military leaders to provoke a crisis within the nation of Chile as a pretext for the intervention of U.S. military forces. Great. As to which Peru has accomplished by the breaking of treaties with Chile over territorial fights, as we can see, can read and reported Omri News Service and their article entitled Tension Increases Between Peru and Chile, in which it says, yet another episode of border disputes between South American countries occurred this week in the Peruvian Congress with a vote in favor of adjusting the sea border with Chile. This tense situation resulted in the 1879 War of the Pacific, where Chile took possession of a large area of territory in the Atacama Desert from Peru and Bolivia. Okay, so we're seeing that there's the United States government, somebody's telling us here, but this is Sorcha Fall. and Russian news services that the United States is trying to interfere with Peru and Chile. I wish they'd leave Chile alone. I'm not surprised. They don't like people necessarily having stability down there, but Chile's been a very loyal ally. In general, Chileans like Americans, and it's going to be sad to see that they're going to be looking to possibly invade or put troops down in those areas. Not going to be happy if that happens. Anyway, we'll be watching that story, and appreciate the whoever sent that. I'm not sure who sent that story. I appreciate somebody, whoever it was, sending that in to letting us know. Here is something from the Yale Free Press called The Oldest New Deal by Michael Bernstein, and it's entitled Franklin Roosevelt, Crypto-Pagan. This is April of 2000. That's a good way to put it. The Oldest New Deal, Franklin Roosevelt, Crypto-Pagan. Everybody thinks we should feed the poor, and everybody always has. At least one would be excused from thinking so in modern America. Despite vast disagreements on family life, economic structure, and other fundamental goals, virtually all Americans believe that the poor should be fed, clothed, and housed. The left and right disagree on methods, but not on the goal. In spite of the moral relativism, we seem to have stumbled upon a universal moral maxim. How did we find it? Some insight might be found in the most unusual episode in Roman imperial history, the establishment of the Roman welfare system. In 361 AD, the Christian emperor Constantius died, and Julian became sole ruler. In his youth, he had studied under Neoplatonists and privately converted from Christianity to paganism. When he ascended the throne, Julian publicly revealed his conversion and earned its epithet, the apostate. He organized the public sacrifices of oxen to the Roman gods, frequently performing them himself, and set about reviving the polytheistic religion of that Christianity had replaced. I'm going to pause there. Some of you have heard the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, say that Rome had no welfare state. And I'm specifically referring to the time of the apostles and before. When they wrote the New Testament, yeah, there was no welfare system or welfare state in Rome. What this guy is talking about is 300 years later, more or less, that a welfare state effectively began under Julian the Apostate. And this is, I believe, is true. But for Paul and Peter, in terms of, you know, the men who wrote the scriptures, had no conception of Social Security, food stamps, educational grants, and the other welfare state stuff that goes on today when they wrote. Just wanted to interject that in case there was, or lest there be any confusion, there's actually not. Roman Empire lasted a long time, and right towards the end, it did enact a little bit of a welfare state. It wasn't anything like Bismarck's in the 19th century, but it was a little bit of welfareism. Continuing back with the article, much to his surprise, Julian found that he could not initiate a pagan Great Awakening by stripping Christianity of its imperial support. Julian hated Christianity, but he understood that it flourished under martyrdom, so he took nonviolent measures to stamp it out. The emperor barred Christians from all imperial offices and positions of prestige. He closed several major cathedrals. He also forbade Christians to teach grammar, rhetoric, and philosophy, since the classic works on these subjects were produced by a pagan culture. Yet even these measures proved insufficient to revive paganism. Julian blamed the failure of his project on the Christians and their charity. They were making the pagans look bad. The impious Galileans support not only their own poor, but ours as well, as Julian observed in a letter to his high priests. He believed that much of Christianity's appeal grew out of its humanitarianism. Julian had nothing but contempt for the Christians. He insisted on referring to them as Galileans to emphasize their provincial roots. But paganism was just not competitive without charity. The essential problem for Julian was that pagan hospitality extended only to one's own kind. The Roman Empire was a multicultural society whose provinces shared little in the way of culture. The constituent groups of the swiftly united empire were of different races, spoke different languages, and practiced different religions. Their imperial government exacted nothing other than taxes and obedience. It was, in many ways, an example of the multicultural vision of America. Unlike Americans, however, the people of the Roman Empire only took care of their own. Charity began and ended with one's own group and society, whether it was national or religious. A citizen of Sicily considered other Sicilians to be his neighbors. The problems of Gaul were of no concern to him. Pagans would have never fed the Christian poor either. Against this backdrop, the Christian practice of universal charity was surprising and attractive. So Julian wanted it demolished instead of restoring the harsh methods of persecuting predecessors. Julian channeled imperial resources into an emulation of Christian charity. He ordered his pagan hierarchy to establish hospices for anyone in need, not only those of his own number, and to provide wine and wheat to the poor for free. He further instructed his priests to accustom Hellenists to acts of goodwill of this kind. The fractured multicultural world of the Roman Empire, in which everyone cared only for his own, was to be reconfigured into the imperial welfare system for purpose of imitating the hated enemy, at least as far as food distribution went. It was an act contrary to pagan tradition and to the diverse empire Julian governed. Julian did not claim it was an inherently good idea. He reassured his priests in the text of his letters that his purpose was only to take from the Christians the credit they had earned from their good works. He wanted to wipe them out, and he assumed that once an imperial system for feeding and housing the poor had been established, the Christian charitable societies would die out. It was a very clever idea to beat the Christians by appropriating one of their most appealing practices. This idea was ever Christian has been lost in our society. We are daily casting off the restraints of Christian morality, and regular church attendance is limited to a small fraction of the population. We hold on to the idea that the poor should be clothed and fed, having largely rejected the religion that produced it. Indeed, if the left succeeds in turning America into a multicultural society, there is every reason to believe that Americans will, just like their Roman predecessors, begin to care only for members of their self-proclaimed identity. If you think yourself as a homosexual or a WASP or a Pakistani before an American, you'll naturally wonder what the plight of other Americans has to do with you. Universal charity was never obvious before the Christian era, as Julian well understood, and multiculturalism by itself will never produce universal charity. Julian died in battle 9 months after he sent out the orders for the welfare system. Since his predecessors did not continue the scheme, we do not know how it would have worked out. But the American experience with the welfare seems to validate Julian's plan. So he had a welfare state for 9 months in Rome. President Roosevelt believed that the New Deal would not discourage the charitable multi-aid societies that had been serving American poor previously, but Julian knew better. Christianity did not die out, as Julian hoped, but much of its charitable work did. Likewise, private welfare organizations and societies shrank to a small fraction of their former size once the New Deal went into effect. The flip side is that Christian societies were quite able to take care of the poor in the Roman Empire and in America. For Julian, this was the entire problem. The Galileans had raised expectations in the Empire that a revived paganism would have to meet. Christians were feeding both their own poor and the pagan poor as well. Just as Julian has only established the welfare programs from the temporary purpose of defeating Christianity, so too were Roosevelt's welfare programs originally intended to vanish as soon as the Depression did. Unfortunately, the program was not retired, but advanced with disastrous consequences. Can the genie be put back in the bottle? That is, can the welfare system be rolled back entirely and the burden shifted to private charitable institutions? That depends on how seriously we take the maxim of universal charity. From these historical examples, it appears that a nation of Christians would have no trouble. Even a nation of people who considered all Americans to be their fellow citizens might pull it off. Julian would be the first to say, however, that a bunch of disparate cultures will not incline to this practice any more than the Roman Empire did. He would consign universal charity to the same rubbish bin as Christianity, and there appears to be little standing in the way of America doing the same thing. This guy, Michael Bernstein, is a senior in Morse College. Bright young man, obviously, and a very, very interesting article. Appreciate the Tyranny Response Network staff finding that this article and sending it up to us. You are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coburn. A little bit overdue for a break, but we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben.
Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
That we are here to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Just reading through some of the other great articles that were sent in, especially from Brian Morton, Christian Libertarians. There is an article called, on LewRockwell.com, They Saw It Coming, the 19th Century Libertarian Critique of Fascism. And he goes through and gives it, this guy named Robert Roderick T. Long, gives an excellent overview of Lysander Spooner and some of the other early folks like Frederick Bastiat and Gustave de Molinari in the libertarian movement that extended the work of Adam Smith and people like Thomas Jefferson in this country and saw 19th century fascism coming. Of course, James Madison would be included, I think, in that group of early libertarians. He talks about the difference between communists and fascists. You know, fascists and communism are cousins. Instead of eliminating the private sector as in communism, fascists simply want to co-opt it or use it to their own ends. And so, and also do not have a violent revolution like Bolsheviks would. They would just be in the Menshevik tradition. So he points some of that difference out. And then talks about, he said, at the end of his article, he says, in short, the 19th century libertarians observed the rise of the various tendencies that would come together to make fascism, militarism, corporatism, and regimentation, nationalist chauvinism, plutocracy in a populist guise, the call for strong leaders and national greatness, the glorification and conflict over commerce and a brute force over intellect, and they bitterly opposed the whole package. And although they ultimately lost that battle, their fallen banner is ours to pick up. And that's great to bring up. And I want you to think about these things again that today are so prevalent in the Bush administration and elsewhere in government. And they come together to make a fascist regime. Militarism, which is becoming on the rise, and has been ever since Clinton, or ever since George Bush the Elder was president. Militarism, corporatism, regimentation, nationalist chauvinism. Think about these things which are prevalent today. Plutocracy in a populist guise. The call for strong leaders and national greatness. Wow. George W. written all over it. The glorification of conflict over commerce and brute force over intellect. Again, consider our last three presidents. And they bitterly opposed the whole package. Oh, that's the libertarians of the 19th century. The classical liberals, as they're called. Yeah, some people said, I really don't like the, I don't understand how, what happened to the liberals. Somebody was asking me this a while ago. Well, classical liberalism is different than modern liberalism. Jefferson, Madison, George Mason, Patrick Henry were all liberals in the classical sense. And it's only in English that we have this issue, or even really only in America and perhaps in Britain, because other places in the world and other languages, they still call those of us who love freedom liberals. And when I switched to speaking Spanish to groups, I have to start calling myself a liberal, and really it was annoying at first. I'm used to it now, but that's the only way they can understand it, because to be a conservative is to be a Tory, it's to be a socialist, it's to support aristocracy or something else that's bad. And so they only understand us as calling us liberals, and they're puzzled over our use of the word conservative up here. That's why the word libertarian is used, because liberal, the meaning of liberal has changed, just like the meaning of so many other English words. Well, here's a couple of stories. We'll try to get to a few of these things that were sent up to us just as we go to the last 5 minutes of the show. By all means, give us a call if you want to talk about anything we've discussed during the last few minutes. Be happy to hear from you. Fuels paradise, according to the Guardian Science. And I believe this is a UK, yeah, it's a UK story. Fuels paradise, power source that turns physics on its head. Scientist says device improves quantum theory. Opponents claim the idea is a result of wrong maths. Alok Jha, science correspondent, it seems too good to be true. A new source of near limitless power that costs virtually nothing, uses tiny amounts of water as its fuel, and produces next to no waste. If that does not sound radical enough, how about this? The principle behind the source turns modern physics on its head. Randall Mills, a Harvard University medic who also studied electrical engineering at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, claims to have built a prototype power source that generates up to 1,000 times more heat than conventional fuel. Independent scientists claim to have verified the experiments, and Dr. Mills says that his company, Blacklight Power, has tens of millions of dollars of investment lined in to bring the new idea to market, and he claims to be just months away from unveiling the creation. The problem is that according to the rules of quantum mechanics, the physics that governs the behavior of atoms, the idea is theoretically impossible. Physicists are quite conservative. It's not easy to convince them to change a theory that is accepted for 50 or 60 years. I don't think Mills' theory should be supported, said Jan Nauditz, a theoretical physicist at the University of Antwerp. What has much of the physics world up to in arms is Dr. Mills' claim that he introduced a new form of hydrogen, the simplest of all the atoms, with just a single proton circled by one electron into his hydrino. The electron sits a little closer to the proton than normal, and the formation of the new atoms from traditional hydrogen releases huge amounts of energy. Well, that's interesting stuff, of course, so we're getting a little too technical for our listening audience, especially for me. I'm interested, an interested reader, but probably could be a little too drab for talk radio. But if he does come up with something that's 1,000 times, if this is 1,000 times more energy than what we've got now, then we certainly want to take note of it, because it's going to be a advance for civilization, and we'll be glad to see it. And we'll be glad to champion it as part of the Christian worldview of taking dominion of the earth, and we're glad it occurs. Well, here's another article that came in. I think this is sent in by Brian Morton of Christian Libertarians. Erasing the Gray Areas of Prisoner Abuse, it's called. This is from the Christian Science Monitor. And the Monitor's view is this. In a politically polarized America, when 90 U.S. senators agree on something, it should prompt attention. That's the case with an amendment to the defense spending bill that more than a year after the Abu Ghraib prisoner abuse story broke, bans U.S. mistreatment of detainees. Proposed by Republican Senator John McCain of Arizona, the text realigns the U.S. with accepted international standards against torture, and is based on the Army's own field manual. It states that no individual in the custody or in the physical control of the U.S. government, regardless of nationality or physical location, shall be subject to cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. Yet the Bush administration, wary of another 9/11, wants an exception for prisoners held by the CIA. Well, there should not be, and Bush is just evil on this. That's terrible to want to treat people that way. I don't care who they are. And Bush probably fabricated 9/11 for all we know. Certainly a lot of evidence to show it was an inside job. Anyway, the administration should heed the voices within its own ranks. They want to prohibit cruel, humiliating, and degrading treatment in new Pentagon interrogation standards, and the House should get on with McCain's amendment and pass it with the president's signature. Not only that, Congress should push ahead with a long talked about an investigation of the CIA's covert sites. It's time to end the debate about prisoner treatment. Appreciate that article. We would like, as Christians, to see it end to torture. Finally, then, on LouRockwell.com, we have Bernanke policies will be stop and go. Murray Sabrin says that when President Bush nominated Ben Bernanke to be the next chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, the financial markets heaved a collective sigh of relief. Bernanke, currently chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers, after serving on the Fed's Board of Governors for nearly 3 years, is considered an outstanding economist. Bernanke's admirers came from both sides of the aisle of the U.S. Senate, which must vote on his confirmation. Republican Richard Shelby of Alabama, who chairs the Senate Banking Committee, said, "David, Dr. Bernanke is an eminently qualified and superb choice for the nomination of Federal Reserve Chairman. He is extremely well-versed in monetary policy issues and has earned tremendous respect with the confidence from policymakers in this country and around the world." And he's probably all picked by the insiders. There's got to be insiders who run the Federal Reserve Bank. We got to be careful not to criticize too much, otherwise you end up getting shot. But at any rate, here's in closing today's show, here's a couple of other words from Murray Sabrin about this fellow. So how will Bernanke do as Fed chairman? He will perpetuate the myth that creating money out of thin air is a good thing for the economy. In short, after the Fed stops raising interest rates early next year, Bernanke will flood the financial system with money to stimulate the economy. So hold on to your hats. It's going to be a bumpy ride. But bumpy ride it may be, it's going to end up doing well in the stock market. So that means next year should be a good stock market year, given what this guy is saying, at any rate. And you've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're very glad you joined us for this show, the 8th day of November 2005. Been a lot of interesting information on here today, and we look forward to another great show right here tomorrow with you, and hope that you'll join us for the next edition of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.